Welcome to the Doubles Only Tennis Podcast, where you learn the best doubles strategies to improve your game and win more matches. I'm your host, Will Bocek. This podcast, my website, and my weekly newsletter all focus on the goal of better understanding the sport of doubles and helping players like you improve faster through actionable advice that you can use in your very next match. My goal is to provide the best doubles strategy resources in the world. And to do that, I study, analyze, and work with players at every level of the game, all the way up to the ATP and WTA tours. If you enjoy this podcast, I've created double strategy products that go even deeper if you want to take your doubles knowledge to the next level. At the end of this episode, I'll explain more about them, or if you want to learn more now, go to thetennistribe.com/products. Here's today's episode. So on day two of the WTA finals, I went over to the player and coach's hotel to sit down with Gabby Dabrowski's coach, who I had on the podcast earlier this year, and that is Dan Kiernan. Hanlon Walsh, our doubles writer, joins me for this one as well. And we actually have a little bit longer conversation with Dan than we're able to get with a lot of the post-match player interviews. And we talked about Gabby Dabrowski and Aaron Ratliff's win the night before over Jessica Pegula and Coco Gauff. And it was one of those wins where you're watching real doubles players against two awesome tennis players who play typically focus more on singles. I guess I'll put it that way. Obviously, Coco and Jessica are not quite the net players that Gabby and Aaron are. And then Gabby and Aaron probably can't hang from the baseline, as Dan mentions in this interview, the baseline with Coco and Jessica. So it's a really interesting matchup. And they were actually down 2-5 in the first set. And then they kind of took momentum from there, got it to 6-6, won a tiebreaker, and then won the second set 6-3 as well. So Dan has some really interesting thoughts on kind of the swings of that match and how he actually felt really comfortable at 2-5 down in the first set. He actually noticed something very specific that he knew was probably not going to continue. So you'll hear a little bit about that. And then I also asked Dan about a very specific phrase that he told his players in the second set when they were up 3-1. So they're up a set and a break at this point. And there's a phrase that he used that I really liked a lot. And I asked him what that meant. And Dan's answers to all of our questions are really, really in-depth and really, really thoughtful. He's an unbelievable tennis coach. He runs an academy over in Spain. And I think you can learn a lot from him. He also has a fantastic podcast that I highly recommend, which I'll link to in the show notes. But he answers that question for us. And then we talk about his relationship with Gabby. They just started working together earlier this year. So we talk about how that coaching player relationship formed. And then also how he works with Aaron's coach. So Aaron has her own coach, and then they have to work together as a team. And it's really fascinating because he talks about how, you know, your whole life you're told to kind of look out for yourself as a tennis player. And then all of a sudden, when you become a pro doubles player or decide to focus on doubles, you all of a sudden have to work as a team rather than think so individually. So it's really fascinating to hear Dan talk about that. So you'll get a little bit of strategy out of this. You'll get a lot of kind of team chemistry, teamwork tips out of this, and then some really good insights as well into what it's like to be a doubles coach on the pro tour. So without further delay, enjoy this very brief but in-depth conversation with Dan Kiernan. Hey, everyone. We are here in beautiful Cancun, Mexico at the WTA Finals with Coach Dan Kiernan. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see you guys. You know, now, as you say, very much beautiful Mexico. You know, there's a lot worse places for us to be right now.
Yeah, it's really nice here. And y'all had a good start with Aaron and Gabby here at the WTA Finals, beating Jessica Pegula and Coco Gauff last night. I think you were down 5-2 in the first set, turned the match around. Talk a little bit about the matchup from last night.
Yeah, I think it was always going to be an interesting matchup. And I think ultimately we knew what we were going to get last night. We were going to get two very good tennis players, you know, and two very good tennis players that, and I'm sure Aaron and Gabby won't mind me saying this, better tennis players than them.
Yeah.
So the aim was to be better at doubles, you know, because we were playing doubles. And ultimately, I guess the match itself, I thought Coco and Jess started serving really well. You know, I don't know. I've just actually, we've just done video there with the girls, and I think it was Coco was 9 for 10. I think Jess was 6 for 7 first serves. You know, obviously Erin had a little bit of a bad start service game, which is going to happen from time to time in these events. So that was the 5-2. So sitting at the side, I didn't actually mind. I felt pretty comfortable that at some point, and I think I actually said to the girls at 5-3, look, Coco's made 9 for 10 or 8 for 9. Mm-hmm. You're going to get some seconds.
Yeah, it's not going to continue.
You know, yeah. so just, and I think it's important for players to have that awareness. Mm-hmm. That sometimes if we get caught up too much in the scoreline, it's easy to think, shit, things are going bad here. So it's all going wrong, you know. But actually the 5-2 wasn't such a big deal. I was happy with how the girls were. They were looking to execute what the plan was. They were putting that out there. And then, yeah, they actually, a great hold to 5-3. And then 5-3, Coco actually started the game well again, 2 first serves. Gabby made a great return at 15 love to 15 all. Mm-hmm. And then I think a double fault came, you know, and all of a sudden you start feeling a bit of pressure. And the girls applied that pressure and then got to a tie break. And at the tie break, actually, I've just watched back today. I remember thinking the girls volleyed really well, but they actually hit six volley winners in the tie break.
Yeah.
You know, so like they put themselves in the positions and ultimately executed, you know, they executed doubles.
Yeah.
And, you know, on another day. And I guess that's the whole concept for me. If you play someone who paints lines, and if Coco kept serving like that and they kept hitting like Coco's first backhand of the day, she cleaned a backhand on the line. Okay, you say too good. Law of averages will tell you it's not easy to keep doing that. So yeah, really proud of the girls putting themselves out there in not an easy condition first time. You're used to maybe a little bit of an easier first match than Coco Gauff and Jess Pegula, you know, so to be able to come out and perform. And obviously Gabby deserves a lot of credit, but I'd like to also shout out Erin on that because she's experiencing a lot of firsts right now. And it's really not easy to put herself in that position and perform to such a high level. So yeah, we're not too up. We're not too down. It's a match. It's, you know, there's more matches to go, and we continue sticking to the philosophy of just trying to get better each day, you know, whether that's match court or practice court. And we trust that the byproduct will be that they'll get a lot of wins along the way as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned trying to beat them in doubles rather than beating them at tennis because they're better tennis players. And one thing I noticed, I don't think Gabby or Erin hit more than one topspin ground stroke at a time. They never. So Erin would hit a topspin forehand and then the ball would come back. And then the next one would be a chip and come in or a lob down the line or something like that. They just refuse to just get into that baseline grind with them. Talk a little bit more about why that worked so well and why that's the game plan against a team.
I mean, ultimately why it comes down to intention, you know, how are you matching your strengths up against somebody else's potential weaknesses, you know, and if you play somebody the wrong way, don't be surprised that they're going to play well.
Yeah.
You know, and you go forehand cross court rally with Jess Pegula.
Yeah.
You're not getting a lot of change out of that, you know, not very often.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the whole concept that we're looking at is developing pressure, making them feel that pressure, you know, seeing lots of movement, seeing lots of variation, you know, not allowing them to settle, you know. And that sounds easy. It's not, you know.
No.
So to have the ability to do that, and also for the girls to stay committed to that in the moments, you know, the big kudos to the girls for doing that. But you're saying about not hitting more than one topspin until the last point.
Yeah.
The last point.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It ended up. And, yeah, you know, that's, I mean, right. That was a massive point, right? I mean, 5-3 juice.
Yeah.
You know, from 5-1, coming back, 15-40 down, back to juice.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you're 5-4. Crowd mm-hmm. get into it a little bit more. You know, Coco serving. And, you know, for Gabby to be able to produce 3 incredible ground strokes, yeah. you know, from the lob in that moment. Shows how confident and how committed the girls are right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, her backhand winner to end the match was like from below the height of the net, down the line, inside out. Like, I couldn't have picked a lower percentage shot for most players, but she executed it perfectly.
I think the thing you said there, Will, for most players, you know, that's, for Gabby, it's not, you know,
exactly.
You know, the beauty of Gabby and the fun part about working with Gabby is she has, I don't know if you ever used to play the game on the Nintendo where Street Fighter or something it was called. And, you know, each different fighter had a different special power, you know, and Gabby as a doubles player, you know, she really does. She has a few little special powers, you know.
Yeah.
When I started working with her, I was like, a younger coach would have jumped in a bit early and said, no, 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 you don't do it like that.
Yeah.
You know, but I stepped back and observed, and Gabby does.
Yeah.
You know, and she's able to execute it. And, you know, that's fun. That's fun as well that someone's playing the sport a little bit different. And mm-hmm. So we go again on Wednesday, and we keep building.
So I want to ask about a phrase that you said last night. I heard you in the coaching box. I think this was second set. You said start again. What does that mean?
If we think into the future, mm-hmm. it brings stress and anxiety. Yeah, we can't control the future. You know, and as soon as we start to get ahead of ourselves, all of a sudden, then that's when some stress, anxiety comes, nerves. We experience those emotions. If we think in the past and shouldn't have done that, should have done this, it brings a strong emotion of frustration or anger or these different emotions. And tennis is played in the present moment. So the ability to reset and go again, the reset, you know, in whatever the situation is a really important skill for a tennis player to have. And I think I said it when they broke to go 3-1 up in the second set, you know, and at that point, we know how quick tennis changes. You know, if you take your foot off the gas, even a moment, you know, before you know it, it's 3-3, you know, you're starting to now experience that frustration of being 3-1 up. You know, so that message was very clear. It was something actually I found myself saying a lot at the US Open as well, you know, of like, no, 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 we now start again. We go again now, you know, and it's, you know, that constant, and especially in this format, it's a sprint,
yeah.
You know, you can be 40 love up and then you get broken with a sudden death juice point. Now you're a set all, you know, you have to live this tennis life as a doubles player very humbly. You've got to show a lot of humility at all times because it can bite you on the arse at any time, you know? So that's really what that message was. Whether they heard me or whether they listened to me is another thing, but I like to think that some of it goes in because I think it's important messaging really.
Well, I remember we were looking at the coach's box quite a bit throughout the night, and it looks like you and Aaron's coach were in constant, you know, communication and collaboration throughout the match, strategizing and talking. So curious, what does it look like when you have a doubles team that has two individual coaches, but you're also working, you know, as one team together? What does that collaboration process look like behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And the reason I think that's a great question is I could imagine it could be a nightmare. Actually,
yeah,
you know, I really do. I think it's. I talk a lot to people about this. What we're talking about with doubles is we're bringing together. Tennis is a very selfish sport. We have individuals. You're an individual. You're independent. You know, think about yourself. Be selfish. We teach. This is how we teach kids. You know, and that's how we teach young professional tennis players. And then they get to the stage where doubles is their career. And we're now saying, no, now you're a team. We've told you to be independent and you've learned your routines and we've learned how you do things, but now we're putting you together. And it's the same with tennis coaches, you know, because a lot of tennis coaches run their own business, self-employed. They were tennis players, come from quite a selfish background. So it's, I have to be honest, it's something that I love personally. I'm a team guy. I like team, you know, I loved US college. I like the team thing of tennis. So I, Bruce, who is Aaron's coach and who does a brilliant job. I got in touch with him when I first started traveling with the girls just to lay some groundwork on the relationship. Now that could have gone any way in some ways. I would have fought to make it work. But I didn't have to with Bruce. You know, I was really lucky, you know, and I'd like to think he'd say the same. We just connected, actually. Sometimes the girls get a bit annoyed because we are so close and we genuinely are. So we, even when we're not there, we're sending a lot of video. We both have a big passion for the sport. We both love doubles. We both watch a lot of tennis. So it's happened and worked very easily. And it's a genuine relationship that if the girls weren't playing together, we've got a friendship now and we've got a tennis love that we would continue working together. So it's very natural for us to bounce back and forth. Neither of us get insulted. Neither of us are trying to have egos. You know, I remember at US Open when they played Taylor and Layla, not that the girls would normally do this, but in that nervy moments of the third set tiebreak, they came over and they said, what play do we do? What do we do? What do we do? You know, and there was that feeling. And actually, we had a little bit of back and forth. And Bruce said to do one thing. I said, no, I don't think they should. I think they should do this. And it was very quick, this kind of high-pressure situation. And then we got a message to the girls. They ran that play where they went body to Layla, body forehand, take away left. Aaron made the dive, knocked the volley off, and, you know, history was made as such. Now, if that relationship wasn't genuine, that could be something that could cause some friction. So the girls don't know it, but they are lucky that they've got two guys that genuinely do get on so well. And, you know, I think we philosophically see the sport from the same standpoint. So,
well, it looked like it from watching you guys last night. So what happens when, I know there was one point when Aaron told Bruce just to be quiet and not talk after every point. Where do you stand? You know, is that a like something that you also have to keep in mind, or did you still feel free to be able to coach Gabby more one on one in that instance when Aaron doesn't necessarily want a voice?
We liked it when she did that. We know how she works. We prefer her to have a little bit of anger to us than anger towards something else on the court. You know, and I think you know that's the Aaron knows that. Aaron knows that Bruce is there unconditionally, you know, and that's the strength of their relationship. You know, I actually spent a bit of time. She'd actually been to my academy a couple of years ago. So it was kind of funny when they got together, because I had a previous relationship with Aaron. You know, we've got the whole relationship as team has been built on honesty. You know, that's been a big thing that we've all had with each other. We've encouraged the girls to get things on the table. Aaron will laugh and joke about that 5 minutes after the match, you know, so it was something that she's done previously a little bit, but almost we feel like, okay, she's not in a bad place now when she's biting back a little bit. As long as obviously it's in a respectful manner, which I don't think it stepped the line last night. And obviously she went on and played pretty good after that as well. So, all was good on that front.
Okay. So that's a good sign. Next time we see her angry at one of you guys in the coaching box,
we poke the bear sometimes.
Can you, just take us a step back a little bit when you and Gabby started working together earlier this year or midway through the year? And I'm sure a lot of the listeners are probably curious what it looks like, you know, during the dating phase of a new coach and player partnership and how, you know, those initial conversations come about.
Yeah. So it was actually back in Rome when Gabby first approached me. So, I actually didn't do any official trips with Gabby until Cincinnati. But I was kind of quietly helping a little bit behind the scenes. I also coached Lloyd Glasspool, Harry Heliavara. So I was there in Rome. French Open, I did actually watch all of her matches, but I was kind of the guy at the back of the stand who was just there, gently starting to give her some feedback, you know. And I guess for me personally, I was looking at the picture, you know, trying to work out what her identity was, you know, where I felt I could input, where I started to get a vision of where she could go. I started to watch quite a bit of footage of her playing, you know, grass courts, remotely managed to watch her a little bit, you know. And then as the, funnily enough, one of the first matches I was, I guess, officially coaching her was she played against Erin, which I think was in Washington with Shuko. So I actually scouted Erin before that match. And at that time I knew that then Erin was about to start with Gabby. So then I sent a lot of questions. I have a structure that I work through. You know, I wanted to kind of give her what I was thinking. And then actually I then got the two girls together and we ended up having two or three Zoom calls. So all of this was kind of going on behind the scene whilst not actually actively being at events with them. And then, yeah, just watching as much as possible and starting to understand, are we on the same page? Do we see the same areas that can be developed as an individual, but more importantly, as a team as well? And it became very clear, actually, from a tennis standpoint, that they had the potential, and I still believe that they're nowhere near the potential that they could be. You know, as with their tennis skills, they complement each other massively well. They really do. And that for me was really quite clear. It was then about how do we now complement personalities? How do we complement the way that someone likes to work on the court? How do we complement, you know, the mentality, all of these bits? And that does take work, and it takes some pretty hard, honest conversations. You know, if anyone wants to watch some film of them playing a couple of matches in the earlier stages, you know, there was a couple of disasters really where it was like, oh God, I'm not so sure about this. But I can't commend the girls enough. They had the conversations, you know, this is how I feel. This is how you make me feel. This is how what I need in this situation. This is, you know, and all of that was, and okay, we maybe had to facilitate that a little bit, but all of that being put on the table, and this is not just tennis, this is any relationship, right? Any friendship, any marriage, any boyfriend, girlfriend, any coach, player, any good, strong relationship has to be based on good, strong, honest communication. And just because tennis is our field, it's no different. And that's where the relationship really starts and is allowed to blossom.
Sounds like a group therapy discussion then.
Yeah, it is. But we all need that, you know. We all need that in life, you know. We all need therapy, you know. The people that pay for therapy tend to be the ones that aren't willing to openly discuss things with other people. So I think that's the starting point for a lot of good things in this world.
Awesome. Well, I know you need to run. Y'all have got practice here in a bit. So, Dan, thank you again for coming on. I'm sure we'll do it again in the future. And good luck the rest of the week.
Thank you. And I just want to say also a big thank you to you guys for, you know, continuing to push the doubles. And, you know, it's great to see you guys out here in Mexico. And, you know, thank you for all the hard work that you guys are doing as well. It's greatly appreciated by us.
Yeah, we appreciate that. It's a lot of fun.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Doubles Only podcast. If you're interested in diving deeper into any topics I discuss, I've created double strategy products that allow me to bring you more podcasts and other doubles content without relying on paid ads. I have ebooks and courses that help you make better strategic decisions during matches and become the smartest player on the court. Go to thetennistribe.com/products to learn more. You can also join my free weekly double strategy newsletter that includes video lessons and more on our homepage. If you want to connect, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or email me directly, will@thetennistribe.com.